This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Teresa Trulson, Director of Marketing at the Children's Museum Tucson.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be able to share our story.
Our listeners today may notice that this recording sounds a little different than usual. That's because the KXCI studios are closed in response to CDC guidelines. But that said, we're still working around the clock to prepare new content. So this episode of Artist Stories is actually being recorded remotely. Both Teresa and I are recording from our respective homes. I want to thank all of our listeners for your continued support as we fine-tune. Teresa, could you briefly describe the Children's Museum for someone who's never been there? For example, maybe you could describe the sense of place room for us.
Well, let me start by saying the Children's Museum is a hands-on learning center for children. So the name can kind of be confusing sometimes, but what we offer is STEAM-based learning for kids ages 0 to 10, and everything is hands-on. They can touch, they can draw, they can experiment, they can do all kinds of things with any of the exhibits. There's nothing that's off limits for them to touch in the museum. For instance, sense of place, like you mentioned, is our room that is all about Tucson and our surrounding area. So it includes a giant cactus in the middle where they can spin a conveyor belt and shoot bats off the top of the cactus. There's the Sabino Canyon, so they can climb up the stairs of Sabino Canyon, listen to the rain stick at the top, climb down the other side with these very uneven stairs, so it's like climbing down boulders. There's a thunderstorm that's created, the monsoon, so they can really experience what it's like in the monsoon with the thunder and the lightning and the sound of the rain. They can go visit Colossal Cave, which is an installation that has bugs and the kind of things that you'd find inside the cave, inside the exhibit itself. There's a bat in there. It's just things that they'll see at Colossal Cave, but they don't necessarily have to go all the way out there. Or this is a way of experiencing Colossal Cave before they get a chance to go out there and visit it personally, because of course we'd love for them to go out and see that as well. It's really just a way for kids to experience and learn about the community that they live in, all in one room. And one of our newest installations in that room is a basket weaving exhibit. So it's a giant form, and it has all different kinds of materials that the kids can weave in and out through the form to create a basket of any kind. And it's our way of showcasing some of the native art that we have in our community that the kids may not get a chance to see on a regular basis. And this is their way of experiencing that.
At the time of this recording, COVID-19 cases are increasing in Pima County, and the Children's Museum is closed to the public until further notice. So, Teresa, may I ask, what is it that all of the Children's Museum staff are doing right now?
Our full-time staff is still hard at work on a lot of different projects. Our exhibit staff is actually in the museum doing updates to a variety of different exhibits so that when we reopen, we are better than we were when we closed. Our electricity exhibit is getting an update. We have new things coming into our biology exhibit. We have some updates to our WeWorld exhibit that just kind of give it a little more oomph when they come back. We're just really excited about the opportunity to have the museum empty and available so that we have that chance to go in and really focus on the physical things that need to be done. That's not something that we normally get a chance to do on a regular basis. In that sense, this has been a real boon for us to be able to do that. Our education staff, our guest experiences staff, they're creating videos, they're doing book readings, they're doing mindfulness exercises, they're doing our exercise videos that go along with some of the programming that we have regularly. Our We Play, our We Explore, and our We Wiggle programming, which is made for the kids 5 and under. And we're posting those videos so that kids have that opportunity to keep the museum experience with them while they're stuck at home as well. And then, of course, our Our development team is out there shaking the trees, as our boss likes to say, and trying to find that support that we desperately need during this time to help us remain active and ready to open when it comes time.
I had been looking at some of the content being posted to your social media. It's mostly staff made, despite the abundance of kind of crafty home educator projects that are flooding the internet. Why did you choose to focus on just the staff made content instead of some of this other stuff?
I, you know, have posted a few things that that really caught my eye and I thought that were helpful to parents who were out there. But there's so much information. There's so many activities. There's so much do this, do that, that I am overwhelmed and I don't have little kids at home. I have teenagers. So, but even just seeing it all and trying to curate it, it is an overwhelming experience. So I can't imagine that parents who are at home trying to get their kids to do schoolwork, trying to just keep them occupied while they're stuck at home, aren't having that same kind of overwhelming sense of all this content. So what we really wanted to do was focus on what we offer as a museum and make sure that the kids who come to visit us on a regular basis still get that experience on social media. They're seeing the same faces, they're hearing the same voices, and it kind of grounds them and gives them that sense of normalcy and that sense of continuation of their regular life. And hopefully is also a way for them to remind them that we're still there so that when we reopen, they're ready and we're ready.
Everyone is having to move their operations online now. What's the silver lining?
Well, as I mentioned before, one of the silver linings is the fact that we have this opportunity to get into the museum and do some physical changes that really wanted to do. And it's harder to do it when we're open every day of the year. So that's one silver lining. It's also, you know, helped us kind of step back and look at our operations and really think about what we want to offer people and how we want to present it to people when we do reopen. And so that's one of the things that our staff is working on. They're looking at operating procedures and the tours that we do for kids, and just making sure that everything is presented in the way that we wanted to pre-present it. And we really don't have that opportunity to kind of step back and look at the overall picture of what we're offering. Usually we're kind of like, oh, we have to change a tour and the way it's presented to match a new exhibit or something. But this really gives us that opportunity to look at the organization as a whole and see where we can improve and how we can change things to make the experience better for our visitors. I mean, it's also given us the opportunity to look at our community to see how we can help. One of the things that we did in our Imagine It space, in our maker space, was we got some sewing machines. So that was actually quite a benefit right now. We have the sewing machines, they went out and got some fabric, and now we're making use of those sewing machines. They're making masks right now, and they're going to donate them to organizations that are on the front lines, maybe like Primavera, someplace that's serving the public on a regular basis right now during the closure. So it's allowed us to kind of reach out into our community and be part of our community in a different way as well.
Teresa, could you tell us a story about a family that really exemplifies the value of having the Children's Museum in our community?
We have a lot of families that we've heard from who really value the museum and what it has to offer. One family that we have, parents of twin girls who kind of weren't ready for that experience when they had those two kids. You know, one kid is hard enough, but when you aren't expecting twins and you end up with two kids and you're not really sure how to be a parent, it's helpful to find that place that makes you feel comfortable. It gives you the information that you need. And this is what April and her husband, Dee, have said to us all along. They started coming when their kids were 3 months old. I think they're about 9 now, so we don't see them as often, but they were ready. I mean, she said from day one in kindergarten, the teacher said that the girls followed directions, participated in carpet time, and transitioned with ease throughout the day. She said they could write and count to 100 and think before answering a question. And she said those skills and that ability to succeed in school is directly because of skills they learned at the Children's Museum, Tucson and Oro Valley. They were one of our first people to go to our Oro Valley location, which opened in 2015. So they learned through our We Play programs how to sit and how to listen. They learned how to wait their turn. They learned how to be curious about the way things work. But it wasn't just the kids who had that experience at the museum. The parents as well found something at the museum that made them better parents. She said that finding community members who were excited to hear her children scream in laughter and that were unbothered by the noise that came along with twins was, in her words, wondrous. And to see staff that were unfazed by a child meltdown, which we've all experienced as parents, but to have those people around you who see a kid meltdown and help you work through it rather than judging you for it. She said that changed the way she parented and it gave her a patience that she never knew she had. And so just finding that community, being able to share her experiences with staff and other parents, it really changed the way that she and her husband parented their kids. And it's so gratifying to us to hear that and to know that the way our staff works with kids, the way they interact with parents, that all makes a difference in their lives overall and not just while they're in the museum.
So how do you help a parent when their child is melting down?
Distraction is always a good way. we were walking through the museum just a few weeks before we closed, and there was a little, we have baby dolls in our Wee World area, in our area for kids five and under. And there was a little girl who insisted that she wanted to take one of the baby dolls home with her. She was just beside herself screaming. She wanted to take the doll with her, and her mother was trying to get the doll away from her. And our executive director, Hillary, and I happened to be walking through, and you know, just having another person there, being able to kind of coax that baby doll away, and just being not a parent. I mean, I think that anyone who has children has experienced this, where, you know, kids are upset and the parent's voice is just white noise sometimes, you know, for those kids. But if another person, if another adult comes in, or in the case of our staff, some young adults or even teenagers come in and start talking to that child, it can distract them enough that it changes their attitude immediately. And it's also just, you know, do you want a stamp? Or singing a song, teaching them that singing a song and helping them clean up. Those are all things that our staff has done that family members have taken with them and allowed them to change the way they interact with their kids based on the way our staff interacts with their kids as well.
I have definitely been in a restaurant before when a child was melting down and somebody in the restaurant would loudly make a remark about, you know, oh, maybe it's nap time. Maybe you need to get that kid out of here or something like that. And it's like, you know, that's just not helpful.
Right.
That's just not helpful. Well, and, so, you know.
And we have a bit of a joke at the museum where if we see a child throwing a tantrum as they're going out the front steps, we say it's a good day. If that kid's unhappy about leaving the museum, we know we've done our job.
Teresa, speaking of these assets and the value that the Children's Museum of Tucson brings, could you tell us a little bit about how it came to be? Could you give us a little history lesson about the museum?
Yeah, so the idea of a children's museum, of a place for kids to do hands-on learning, was really came about with a group of women in the community, mostly educators, who understood the value of that hands-on, informal learning environment and that kids thrive in that kind of environment. There had been kind of a science center that was at Fort Lowell Park, and the people who ran that science center and these women got together and they created what was called the Tucson Children's Discovery Center. And that opened in 1986 along Pennington Avenue, actually, in a building owned by Seal Peterson. And it was really started as a hands-on learning center for children. Fairly small, obviously. Those buildings aren't very big right there. It moved eventually to where the Rogue Theater is now, with a much bigger footprint and more interactive exhibits. I think their first one up there was a dinosaur exhibit, which is, of course, always fun for kids to see the dinosaurs. In 91, when the main library moved out of the Carnegie Building on 6th Avenue, the Children's Museum was selected by the city to take over the lease of that building, and that's where we've been ever since. So we are in this great historic 100-plus-year-old building in downtown Tucson, and that in itself is a learning experience, right, to come in and see this great old building. But we've never lost sight of our founders' focus and of their vision of the museum as a place that offers hands-on learning for children and their families. And that's really what we're all about. And it's not necessarily, you know, they're not sitting at a desk. They're not learning in the sense that they're reading out of a, you know, they're learning something out of a book, but it's just that idea that there's curiosity. They're able to see things and touch things. And it just kind of sets off a spark in their minds that makes them more willing to learn, more knowledgeable, more curious about things and the way they work in the world. And then that just spurs more learning.
My daughter is 5 now, and I remember when she was a little bit younger, we would go through our world, we would go through our days, and everything was not for you, not yours, don't touch, leave it alone. Nothing really in the adult world is created for children. So to have a place where you can take your child and actually allow them to, yes, touch, yes, it's for you, yes, explore it, that's a really unique treasure.
Right. And it's not just one room, it's not just one place within a larger larger organization, a larger building. It is the entire building, outside and inside, from the glider bikes that are in our courtyard that allow them to experience that outdoor space in a new way, to the fruits and vegetables in Bodyology, where they can pick them off the trees, they can put them in the baskets, they can shop like they see their parents do at the grocery store, to the wall in Imagine It, our maker space builder exhibit. They can go onto the stage in WeWorld and imagine themselves in a play or performing a dance or singing, which we've seen all those things happen. And the parents sit in on the bench in front of it and watch. And then there's the wall in Imagine It, the paint wall, where the kids can go in, pick up a paintbrush, and literally paint on the wall of the museum. We have apologized to parents for that one, because we might be teaching them something they don't want them to take home on that one. For kids, I mean, from the moment that wall opened, it's been like a magnet. Just that idea that they can pick up a paintbrush and paint right on a wall without getting in trouble. What a great experience for them.
We've been talking a bit about staying connected with our audience despite having closed doors. What are some other repercussions of having to have closed doors right now?
You know, we miss the kids, definitely. And I'd be wrong if I didn't say that was, you know, something that made us very sad, just not seeing the kids every day. But, you know, also it's an income source. We are a nonprofit, and half of our income comes from our admission people coming in on a daily basis. And so that's a real struggle for us, missing that source of income. We also get a lot of support from the events that we have, from special days like our Make It Mondays that are coming up this summer, from our events like Earth Day Festival, which should be coming up this coming Saturday, but of course had to be canceled. There were a couple events last month that were also canceled. And all those events, that's how we fundraise. That's how we get support from our community. And when we get support from other businesses and grants to support those events, that's part of our income stream. And so losing those has really hurt us economically, just like any other business that is struggling during this closure. And so that's really hard on us. Plus, we're also losing that opportunity to partner with other organizations. The Earth Day Festival, you know, we have 50 organizations to come in at least and set up tents and give out their information to the community about how they can, you know, be better stewards for our earth. And that's going to be a real loss to the community that we're not able to offer that this year. Our second Saturdays, our Art After Dark Festival that we have on the second Saturday of every month, where we bring in arts communities and we pay them a stipend, which, you know, again, that's affecting their bottom line, right? They come in and they are able to showcase what they offer to our visitors. And that's a real loss, not just for our visitors, but for those organizations as well that are losing out on that opportunity. And we're really looking forward to that event restarting.
Teresa, how can people help support the Children's Museum now and when you reopen?
Well, our membership is still active. You can go in and buy a membership and just be ready to go when we reopen. That's at childrensmuseumtucson.org. We are obviously always accepting donations if anyone is able to give them, though it is tough for us to ask for that during this time because we know everybody is struggling. Just looking forward to what's coming up in the future, just planning to visit when we reopen and being ready to walk in the door is just going to be a huge support to us. We can't wait to see everybody back. Our annual fundraiser is planned for October 3rd. And as far as I know, that is still in the works. That's called Evening of Play, and it is an adults-only fundraiser at the museum. So we can get that started and bring in some money. But it also allows adults, parents, grandparents, and even people who don't have kids to come in and experience the museum like a kid, but without those kids along. It includes some food and drink and entertainment, and it's always a really good time.
That just sounds like so much fun.
It is, and this is our 10th year, so we're really looking forward to celebrating that 10 years of Evening of Play and of bringing the community together and the adults together to play in the museum. It is a really fun event. We're really grateful for the support that we are receiving during this time from our corporate friends, from our board members, even from places who are offering grants to help museums like ours, organizations like ours, stay functioning during this time. And we really hope that the community doesn't forget about us while we're closed and really looking forward to opening our doors again and welcoming everybody back in.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Teresa.
Thank you. We really, again, appreciate telling our story and letting everyone know that we're still here.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County.
Yay!